Welcome to The Dreaming. I'm Sasha Smulders.
I'm Joe Foljam. This is The Sandman, issue 64, The Kindly Ones, part 8.
Cover.
This is sand, hourglass, photography, various objects, and Macintosh to put it all together. This reuses objects from previous covers, including the hourglass from issue number 1.
Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of funny that they mention Macintosh. No one will bother to mention that today. Like, because you just assume that when you take pictures and then you play with them that you've used a computer.
Oh, yeah.
So no one mentions it now. Like, if you were going to mention that I made this, you would never mention computer because we just said, of course you used your computer.
Right. It's because he didn't for the first bunch of them.
Absolutely.
They were
totally
done the standard old way. I remember people talking about, why is Dave McKean's stuff so good? And Neil saying, probably because most other people only use Photoshop.
Yeah.
And he actually creates the art and then takes pictures of it and then manipulates it and does stuff with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he got very happy when he got his Macintosh. It was he resisted it for a bit, but was really happy with how it turned out. I don't have any other notes for it. I like it. It looks good.
Yeah, I think it's there to remind us that, like, Dream is running out of time, that maybe all the characters are.
Yeah.
You know, like things are, we're in Endgame, and so it's like, tick tock, tick tock.
Yep.
Only, no, that's because hourglasses don't make another sound. Like sand through the hourglass, these are the days of Dream's life, I guess. It's rather long.
It's been, I mean, he's been around since the beginning of the universe.
So, you know.
So that's what's 14 billion years, I think.
It's a real big hourglass.
Yeah, it's huge, huge. Each sand is a galaxy.
Oh.
It's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Okay.
The cover date for this issue is November 1994. The in-store date was September 27th, 1994. And let's do the credits right now. Dave McKean, of course, did the cover. Neil Gaiman also, of course, is the writer. Teddy Christensen is the artist for this issue. I think Mark Hempel was very busy, like had a hard time keeping up, and they kept getting other people to help out. Teddy also did Sandman Midnight Theater a few years after this came out, which was about a different previous Sandman in DC Comics, but also written by Neil Gaiman. Daniel Vazzo is the colorist, as is Android Images. I believe, I've said this a few times, Android did the recolors later on, the digital recolors to fix things up. I haven't found the total details on that. Todd Klein, of course, the letterer, Karen Berger, the editor, and Shelley Bond, the associate editor.
So, like you said, it's Teddy is the...
Teddy Christensen is the artist. So he did the pencils and inks.
Yeah, I like some of his stuff. There are some aspects of how he draws certain characters that I really, really like. And there's some stuff that I am not as big a fan of, I would say, in comparison to some of the other artists. Like, I don't love his depiction of Dream, although I understand why he draws him that way. It's just not, like, appealing to me.
Mm.
But then, like, how some other characters are drawn, I absolutely love. Like, I love how he draws Delirium.
Yeah.
Like, there's a couple of shots of Delirium. There's one in particular that is, might be my favorite picture of her. Maybe not that, but, like, and I like how he draws Rose and Jack. Like, I really like how they look.
Mm-hmm.
And the Corinthian. I think he does, a great job with the Corinthian. Yeah.
I really enjoy the art in this issue. But it is different. And I know what you're saying. Like,
it's
a few
not my
things.
Favorite.
A few things feel off.
Yeah, I'd say overall, like, I think I like the style of the other artist who's mostly been doing this
Mark
issue.
Hempel. Yeah,
Mark Hempel. I think I primarily like Mark Hempel's style more overall, but I really like how some of the characters here, some of how these characters are drawn in this one.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see a week in the Dreaming in this issue. That seems to be what it is. Moon Day, Truesday, Day, Woden's Day, Thirst Day, Fire's Day, Satyr Day, and Sun's Day.
Does that mean that Neil originated hashtag Thirsty Thursday before all the rest of us did?
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
Neil invented it.
Yeah. That's right. Way before the hashtag, he just decided that Thursday would be Thursday.
Before Instagram.
Nobody else ever realized that Thurs sounded like thirst until Neil Gaiman came along.
Cool. Thirsty Thursday.
So we start with another string, but this time it's about to be cut. We've had strings starting all the panels in these, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of cord, some kind of wire, something like that. And now we've got a string and a pair of scissors approaching it.
Spooky.
Mm-hmm.
So on Moon Day, he starts out hanging out with some kids.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite part of this is the fire salamander.
Yeah.
This looks like so much fun.
The fire salamander brings ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
That's cute.
Don't touch the salamander.
No.
But do touch the ice cream. Kind of looks like mochi, actually, because they're in little balls.
Oh, yeah.
Mochi. In the room that they're all hanging out in, the scarecrows, they're all those things are scarecrows, and they have horrible hands.
Yeah.
Not okay.
They can't help it. They're not real hands. Their hands are made of, I don't even know. Aren't scarecrow hands tend to be just gloves at the end of a stick?
Yeah, so what's with these things?
Well, the glove fingers are all curled up and weird because they don't have any fingers in them. I think a lot of the dreaming is creepy weird, even though it's not necessarily dangerous or awful.
Absolutely.
I like that they whisper among themselves in the voices of the stars of the silent screen. Does that mean that they don't whisper? That they don't say anything when they whisper? Or does that mean that they have the voices of the people who were stars of the silent screen but never got recorded? I don't know.
Mm.
I like to think the mystical version, that they whisper to themselves in the same way that stars of the silent screen would. Which I guess means that text shows up on a card, a black card in the middle.
Who whispered amongst themselves in the voices of the stars of the silent screen.
Yeah.
No, so it's the voices that were never recorded.
Okay.
It's like the idea of voices that existed but never got recorded.
Yeah.
And so those are the voices they whisper with. Voices that we can't ever hear again.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike all the voices that come after it. Voices that the face was famous and the voice never was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I wonder how many stars of silent screen had just awful voices. I'm sure there were a bunch that just didn't have good voice work and ended up not getting work after they were able to start doing talkies.
You've just described the plot of Singing in the Rain.
Oh, is that what it is?
It's literally the plot of Singing in the Rain.
Oh, okay.
This like famous actress, and then they start making talking pictures, but she talks. She's like this beautiful like romance actress, but her voice is, she goes, "I can't stand them." Like that's her voice.
Yeah.
And so like the whole plot of the movie is that they find another woman, a young woman who can sing really well. And so this actress is in the movie, the famous actress is in the movie, and then the other girl fills in the singing lines for her, like sings her parts for her.
Oh, okay.
And mayhem ensues.
Oh.
Stuff ensues.
I guess I should watch People that fall movie in love at some point.
It's a bit boring. There are a lot of long, boring scenes, but then the scenes that are good are so good.
Hmm.
So I'd watch it with you. It's great. I like it a lot.
I mean, how bad could it be? I watch all sorts of crap.
It's very good, but I will mention that there are long, kind of boring bits that you can sometimes skip through.
You know, I say that, and that's just not true anymore, to be honest. Mm. There's way too much good stuff these days. I actually avoid watching crap.
Mm.
Like, I can't be bothered to watch bad things, because there's way too much good media to consume that you don't, even I, who has a lot of time to watch media, just can't get through it all.
Well, the best parts of Singing in the Rain are dances, so mm-hmm. if you don't totally gel with dance, it might not be as, I don't know, I think it's spectacular.
I'll watch it.
It costs a lot of money to make.
What's the worst that could happen? I don't enjoy it, big deal. it's at least then I would be able to go, you know, I watched this classic and I hated it. Maybe I'll say that.
I'll be hurt though.
Maybe I'll, well,
no, I won't. I'm the one to admit,
well,
it's boring.
Well, now I'm
places.
Not allowed my opinion, I guess.
He arbitrated a dispute between the Knights of Clouds and the Body Politic.
Yeah. The only reference I have here from this panel is the very last bit, The Snows of Yesterday. That's a reference to the French poet François Villon, who wrote Ballade des Dames du Temps Jadis, translated as Ballad of the Ladies of Time Gone By.
Mm-hmm.
And it repeats in each stanza, "Oh, where are the snows of yesteryear?" The final stanza is, "Prince, do not ask me in the whole week where they are, neither in this whole year, lest I bring you back to this refrain, oh, where are the snows of yesteryear?" And actually, the word yesteryear was created for the translation of this poem. The original French actually says, "Where the snows of last year," if you translate it directly. But the person who translated it created the word yesteryear, and it's now a word.
Oh, sounds nice. I like it.
And it originally meant the year before, like last year. But now yesteryear means, or and especially yesteryears, the plural, means years gone by.
Hmm.
And there's a lot of references to the snows of yesteryear in popular culture. Like it's mentioned even in Inglourious Basterds.
Oh.
Yeah, this is a very famous poem. I don't know it myself that well, but I'll put a link up to the Wikipedia page, which has both the French and English versions. So you can go check that out if you're really interested. It's just a casual reference that Neil threw in. I don't think it's all that important.
He walked from his castle to the dreams of a small boy in Hong Kong. He remained there for some minutes, observing quietly, and then he left.
Any idea what this is?
A young boy in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
No?
So remember Nada, Dreams Old Love?
Oh, yeah. So Nada was reincarnated.
She was reincarnated as, we're pretty sure, a young boy and definitely in Hong Kong.
Okay.
So,
and it's been a couple of years, so that makes sense.
Yeah. The art style here is Japanese, though, not Chinese.
Mm.
So that's kind of odd. Could be an artist mistake. Could be simply that this is the media the boy is consuming. I don't know.
It's probably a mistake.
Probably.
Yeah.
And then he ate some good food in a dream that he thought was quite good.
He ate sparingly.
Yeah, sparingly. Well, he doesn't need to eat that much, so he just tasted it.
He's asked to permit sending a dream of warning to a teenage girl in South Africa. The dream is apparently going to drive her to grow up and take charge of the country, unite divided factions. And if she doesn't have it, she'll become a nurse, which is also totally legit.
Yep. Pretty interesting little girl.
Mm-hmm.
In the bottom left panel, we're pretty sure that that's Dream standing up.
Yeah. Yeah.
He relayed his decision to the tribal gods, and we see both a black god, we would assume, and we're pretty sure that's an Afrikaner tribal god.
Mm.
So that's a representative of the white people in South Africa who are probably, that god is probably like, nope, don't send her that info.
Mm.
Yeah, this was about the time when apartheid ended. It was repealed on 17th of June, 1991, pending fully democratic multiracial elections set for April of 1994. So this comic came out just as apartheid in South Africa ended.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what the decision is.
Yeah.
And then to conclude the day's work, he gave an elderly tortoise, alone on her island these past two centuries, a dream of her love, roasted by passing sailors long since for his rich green flesh.
I assume he didn't send her a dream of the turtle being roasted, but instead a dream where they're together.
Oh.
As you can see in the background, it appears there are two turtles
in
the background.
No, I think that...
Tortoise.
Yeah. I think the dream was very nice. It was just saying her love had been roasted by passing sailors.
Sorry, it's just the way that sentence is constructed
kind
of leaves it open to him sending her a dream of the turtle being roasted and eaten.
Right, yeah.
Also, if tortoises were not so endangered and whatnot, I would like to taste some.
Mm.
But also, I don't know, I've swum with sea turtles and they're so sweet and wonderful and endangered. I know tortoises and sea turtles are not the same, but very large turtles are not doing so well on our planet.
Yeah.
They're not doing so well.
Yeah.
So any of them, they seem so nice and sweet and wonderful. I like them.
I would eat one if I was stranded on a raft in the ocean, but other than that, probably wouldn't bother.
I mean, if it was already cooked, I wouldn't say, go kill that turtle for me and then eat of the turtle. I would not do this.
Okay.
But if I was somewhere and there was exotic meats and the turtle was there and someone had already cooked it and it was there, I would taste of the turtle.
Yeah, I probably would too.
Yeah.
Sure.
I would taste of most animals in that circumstance just because it's there and why not?
Yeah.
You only live once.
Mm-hmm.
So did those
animals.
By the animal. Vegan listeners, don't come after me, please.
I look forward to when all of this will just be grown in a lab, or not even in a lab, in a giant factory that just pounds out fake turtle meat or fake whatever meat you want.
My God, yes.
The whole argument will be over when that happens.
Yeah, I'm gonna eat some lab tiger in that case.
Then I think, yes. Well, I hear carnivores don't taste that good. But
I know,
like,
but I'm gonna do it just so I can gain its power.
Right. Well, then I'm gonna eat dragon.
Yes. Awesome. We are on the second page, and we have fully off the rails.
Yep.
Ooh, this next one's my favorite.
Yeah.
So he makes some nightmares, and he sends them off.
Yeah, he actually created this nightmare in issue 11.
Did he?
Yeah, we saw him make this nightmare with with the empty face like that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, but it's three of them.
Yeah.
Was it three last time?
Yeah, he created three. It's just casually, he was on the shore of the dreaming and creating a new nightmare, and there's three of them.
Oh, I remember that now, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's so cute. They came back.
Yeah.
I really like the bit where he says he gave it words of approval. In return, it blushed black with pleasure.
Right. That's how a nightmare would blush, I guess.
I know. I just like it that it's got these horrifying empty faces, but it just came back with some weird little gifts, and then it blushed.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was affectionate to it.
Yeah. That is certainly the kind of nightmare I would have, especially as a child.
Is it
like weird
face?
Body horror? Not, I didn't have empty face, but it's the style that I would have, like weird body horror that, like that. Ugh.
Mm.
Yeah. Not going to go into my childhood nightmares, but just to say.
That sounds like a bonus episode.
Those would, yeah.
Then the Prince of Stories walked the bounds of the dreaming, becoming with the shores of night, and from there to the borders of the shifting places.
We've seen the shifting places. That's where he met Marco Polo.
Mm-hmm. He took ship in the archipelago and inspected the Skerries, tallying each one, no matter how insignificant.
And we've seen the Skerries as well. That was in Game of You. That was where the land was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that, what is a Skerry?
A reef or rocky island.
Ah, I gotcha. Okay. So they're the little islands that pop up along in the sea.
Yeah.
And he's inspecting all of them.
Yeah. And one of them was the land.
For some reason, I thought that they were maybe a fish.
Oh, no, I defined it back in that issue as well, because they called them the Skerries, yeah.
Well, I'll remember for sure this time.
No, you won't, but it's fine. I won't either. I had to Google. It's like, what does... I knew Skerry was like island, but I wanted to get the accurate one, so I had to look up the exact definition again.
Yes, I do want the listeners to be sure to know that there are times where Joe edits out the clickety-clackety of him Googling things.
Constantly.
And then he just gets to sound smart.
Oh, yeah. No, I will never deny that that's how this works.
He is very smart, though.
No.
Very smart.
You'd think, but no.
He is very smart.
He rode a black horse across the Lake of Dawn. I don't know what that is. And rode a white horse through the Mandrake Wood. Also don't know what that is. And rode a screech owl over the Via Lacrimae. Via Lacrimae is Latin for Road of Tears. And not sure what the significance of that is, but there is a Trail of Tears, which is not a happy story.
In the same day, he switched horses twice.
He needed three times if you count the screech owl's amount.
Yeah. It was like one horse for this place and one horse for another. That's decadent.
Well, you can only ride a horse so long and it gets tired.
I guess.
I don't know how long that is, but I've watched enough cowboy movies to know that.
He walked through the love fields, and from there he walked into nightmare.
Pretty sure I see at least one nipple in there.
What?
Bottom right.
Bottom right.
Basically the cloth hanging there, the corner
that's pointing right at it. Looks like a nipple.
Yeah.
That's it. This book is canceled.
I think it might have actually been in trouble for that at some point, yeah.
Aw.
I know. Censorship is so weird.
Yeah. It's okay, as long as it's not a female nipple.
I think it might be, though. Mm. But it's indistinct. It's indeterminate, so maybe they got
like all nipples. They could be anything.
I'm totally with you. Facebook is ridiculous in allowing male nipples and disallowing female nipples. The world is topsy-turvy and weird.
Mm-hmm.
Humans are broken. Let's move on.
Free the nipple.
Free the nipple.
Especially dog nipples. Free those first.
So we continue the pattern of having the title of the page over top of a dwelling. And here it's Dream's Castle. It's Woden's day. And that is the day when Odin actually showed up. And we saw that happen back in issue 63.
Mm-hmm.
The previous issue.
Yep. They had their little talk. And that was when he had been in the basement. He'd been basically doing stuff around the castle all day. That was his day, was castle day.
He's been doing his job. This was castle day for sure. But what we've been hearing so far is several days of Dream doing his work, right?
Mm-hmm.
These are his responsibilities, this Lord of the Dreaming. And this is stuff that didn't happen, I guess, when he was imprisoned away.
Yeah, I like the one where he walks through the castle and he just talks to all the, basically, like his staff.
Yeah.
And like hears their grievances.
Which is next.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go over to that page.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like the big flaming baby man.
Yeah.
That's me.
Is his grievance, I don't have eyes. That guy's got way too many eyes. Can't I have some of those eyes?
I don't know, but I feel a kinship to the big grieving baby man.
Right. There's a lot of references on this page, and the only one that I know of for sure is the old man with the swan's arm who tends the back stairs.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Brothers Grimm fairy tale called The Six Swans, and it's a story about six princes who were transformed into swans. The woman in the story had to create jackets out of nettles in order to reverse this curse, but she didn't have enough nettles to finish the final jacket, so it didn't have an arm. So when he put on the magic thing, his arm stayed a swan's arm.
Awkward.
And this is him now older and working for Dream, because once you're in a story, you get to go work for Dream afterwards, apparently.
Mm.
Oh, and the bottom left, I like this. He spoke to the embryonic silicon dreams who clustered in a far ballroom and whispered to them briefly about the other machines that had dreamed in the distant past. So this is very cool, because like, I think one of the things that as somebody, especially with the internet now, you'd be reading Sandman and being like, what about artificial intelligence? Will it dream? And I think Neil here is saying, oh, it will. It's not now. It's just embryonic dreams. But eventually machines, silicon intelligence will dream. And yes, Morpheus will be in charge of that.
Interesting. Okay, see, when I read that, I thought it would be alien life, because in a world like that doesn't have like, if it's not like carbon-based life forms, they might be like silicon-based life forms or something else.
Yeah. This is very Earth-centric.
Yeah.
But there definitely is a dream that is alien and deals with silicon-based life forms, but I don't think that's a reference to that.
Okay, this is more, because he mentions embryotic, that's why you think it's that.
I think basically they are not yet born, because artificial intelligence is not advanced enough yet to dream. But I think basically it's inevitable that they will, or at least in this story.
Mm.
We already have a process called deep dreaming.
Yeah.
Right? We've already got the very basics of that, where we give a computer program to look at a picture and then deep dream weird things out of it. That's where you get those pictures where eyeballs show up everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They call that deep dreaming.
Yeah.
So we're seeing the start of that now.
When the day was almost over, he went into the throne room and took stock of certain items there, including those things he keeps in that room behind colored glass, the raw stuff, untamed, that is central to the dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta go look at my magic stuff. On Thursday, he goes and sees Amanda Palmer.
This is probably Foxglove.
Oh.
Who was in A Game of You.
Oh, yeah.
She's also featured in the Death miniseries that comes out 2 years after this issue came out.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of a preview that this character is going to be returned to.
Because mm-hmm.
you'll notice she's got quite a few more listeners here than she used to.
Mm.
Right? She's got the big double spotlight and a big crowd. She's up on stage. And then in the next panel, he notes basically that Neil Gaiman appreciates graffiti as art.
Yeah.
Because that's what Dream is doing, is appreciating his art. Even though it was ephemeral and about to be demolished.
Mm. The way her head is turned to the side, it kind of reminds me of The Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no other person in it.
Mm.
But yeah, just like the flowing hair and the head turned to the one side.
Mm-hmm. In the small park in Central Europe, he stopped to feed the pigeons because it gave him pleasure so to do. Although he stopped when it was pointed out to him that a sign said, "Do not feed the pigeons." The sign is in Hungarian, but it doesn't say, "Do not feed the pigeons."
What does it say?
It says, "It is forbidden to eat the pigeons."
Ah.
I'm pretty sure it needs to say, "It is forbidden to feed the pigeons," but that would be a galambokat etetni telos, not eteni. Etetni is eat, or feed, sorry.
Oops.
Yeah, well, again, this happens.
I don't suggest eating pigeons that are fed by people.
I don't know.
Birds taste like what they eat. So if they've been eating garbage, they taste like garbage.
Oh, yum.
Like it does affect how they taste.
Okay.
But pigeons are probably delicious if you raise them and feed them like grain and stuff. Probably really yummy. Watched an open-air performance of A Midsummer Night's Dream. Back to Midsummer Night's Dream again.
That's his play, remember? Yeah. He wanted Shakespeare to write him a play.
Yeah.
He was, however, extraordinarily amused by the performance of the actor playing the part of Bottom. Bottom being the one whose head got turned into an ass's mm-hmm. head.
Mm-hmm.
And
Titania falls in love with him.
Yeah, Bottom is very much the comedic center of that entire play. The big ham with all the funny lines. Who thinks he's super talented, typically not portrayed as being super talented.
And then he visits all of his homes. make sure they're still working.
This house kind of looks like the one in Florida where Rose stayed during the Doll's House.
Mm. Fire's Day, Fire's Day, gonna go out on Fire's Day. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. That's a really dated reference, and I apologize.
It's about time for that song to come back and be popular again.
Yeah.
Poor little rich girl.
Rebecca Black?
Yeah.
Why do I know her name?
I don't know.
I don't know why.
I don't know. I couldn't remember, but you said, as soon as you said it, I was like, that's her. It's that because poor girl. It's because she went viral for a long time because she was a young girl who wanted to record a pop song and her rich parents paid for a production company to do it. And then people...
It went viral.
It went viral. That's all that happened.
Yeah.
It's fine. Do you know how terrible my video would have been at that age?
Oh, yeah.
Ugh. Ugh. Can't blame anybody for that stuff.
That's why I feel kind of bad for her.
I do too. And her friends who were dancing in the video and looking goofy and like, who wasn't goofy at that age?
Mm-hmm.
I was super goofy. Come on. Get over it, everybody. We have. We've all forgotten about her, except for Sasha, apparently.
I'll never forget.
That poor girl. Anyway, Delirium drops by.
Well, first of all, she calls first this time.
Yeah.
She does it right. She calls first.
I have your Siggy thing.
Hmm. So my favorite picture of Delirium is the center left.
Third panel. Yeah.
Yeah, third panel. She goes, hi. I'm looking for my doggy. Do you remember my doggy? I got him on the day that I ate all of the cherries all up from our brother.
I have not forgotten.
I just love that picture of her. Yeah. She looks great.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the eyebrows going up and just a little dot for the eye. And
mm-hmm. Her hair looks great.
Yep. Great colors.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Love it. She has a hard time getting the information across. Dream is a little confused. Wait, you saw destruction? And she's trying to tell him about the time she saw Destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And he both said it wouldn't hurt to go see him, but you also shouldn't go see him.
She doesn't end up, if we think about the conversation she had with Destiny before,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, maybe I could go make Dream feel better because he's having a hard time. She doesn't make him feel any better. I think she maybe makes him feel worse.
I think so.
Yeah.
I really love her. She gets these flashes of insight mm-hmm. and it happens over the next page on page 8 in those last three panels. It's more than that. The things we do make echoes. Suppose, for instance, you stop on a street corner and admire a brilliant fork of lightning. Zap! Well, for ages after, people and things will stop on that very same corner, stare up at the sky. They wouldn't even know what they were looking for. Some of them might see a ghost bolt of lightning in the street. Some of them might even be killed by it. Our existence deforms the universe. That's responsibility. Like, that is her being really insightful. That is pointing out that, yes, she really does know things, which she points out on the next panel, over on the next page.
Well, I guess because he's turning down helping her out to say that he's, you know, taking care of his responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
But she's basically in that moment saying, isn't everything your responsibility?
Yeah.
Everything in the whole world. And like, you only choose to look after the responsibilities that suit you.
Yeah.
And like, there are people that you affect that you conveniently decide not to think of as your responsibility.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a good try. Mm-hmm. She just doesn't know where her doggy is.
Yeah.
He conscripted a small but highly conscientious nightmare to help his sister find her companion and sent them on their way. I know the nightmare's name because we do meet him again. I'm not going to spoil it.
Spoilers!
No, I'm not going to.
I should guess the nightmare's name.
Okay, what's his name? You'll never guess it.
Is it Peter?
No.
It should be Peter.
It does have a P in there.
Whoa.
Somewhere.
Wow.
I mean, it's a first and last name.
Oh.
There's one P. Never mind. It's not a real name, really, even. We'll meet him.
And if he was shaken inside or disturbed in any way by this meeting, he gave no evidence of this.
Hmm. And then we hear from Rose Walker.
Rose has a good time.
Yeah, with the cute lawyer boy.
Yeah. So basically, they end up hanging out having dinner, and then they go for a walk, and they get so cold, so they just, you know, they do that thing where you mean to hang out with someone for a short period of time, and then it just keeps going on. And then she invites him up to her hotel room. She just decides to be very bold,
mm-hmm.
and tells him, go find a condom. Like, if you're going to come up to my hotel room, just go find some condoms.
Yeah.
Find a pack.
Yeah.
And eventually he does show up. They do it. The thing. The sex. They do the sex. And then he takes off first thing in the morning. And she really, really likes him.
Yeah. He does start off by mentioning during the conversation about the village being the Domesday Book. The Domesday Book is a manuscript record of the great survey of much of England and parts of Wales completed in 1086 by order of King William the Conqueror. The pub mentioned by Jack is in fact the Griffin in Fletching, a beautiful village in Sussex, very close to Wychcross, that is indeed in the Domesday Book. Although the people who made the Sandman annotations note, they don't think that Jack would have to ask the landlord about the age, though, as the pub is quite a tourist attraction, and as they recall, there's quite a lot of its history hung up on the walls as decoration.
Neat.
There actually is a website for this. It's thegriffinin.co.uk. You can go check that out right now. It's been owned by the Pullen family for the past 40-odd years. They bought it from the Pug Morgans. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that exactly right, P-U-G-H hyphen Morgans, whose son would go on to drop the P-U-G-H and become clueless tabloid journalist and blowhard Piers Morgan. So this makes me think that there was like a family curse, that if the family ever lost control of the Griffin, that they would turn into a bunch of know-nothing nincompoops that the whole world would know as such.
Oh my God. I cannot believe you found that connection.
Kablam. Like
that's that? Wild.
Yeah.
You blew this story wide open.
Boom. And that's how there's 1 degree of separation from Piers Morgan to the Sandman. Well, 2 maybe.
Because fiction.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it suddenly seems far less exciting, that it's interesting that they're talking about the creature that the pub is named after is Griffin.
Yeah. Considering what happens later.
Yeah.
That hourglass sure is dropping a bunch of sands through it.
Mm-hmm.
When Rose arrived, there was no snow on the ground.
Yeah, she's been here a while.
And now it's really snowing. So, big changes in the weather.
Mm-hmm. Where's he got to be at 5:30?
Well, he's a lawyer.
Yeah, so I bet the stuff doesn't start happening until like 8 a.m.
Maybe we'll find out.
Next up, the morgue. Our 2 buddy cops.
And I like that in the real world, it says Friday instead of Fire's Day.
Mm.
So like the Dreaming has all the same days of the week, but they have different cool names.
Yeah. So our 2 buddy cops are going into the morgue and they are looking at the body of person whose name I forget.
It's Carla.
Carla. They find Carla's body all burnt up.
Yeah. The Corinthian has a flashback to Issue 44, Brief Lives, Part 4.
A half-dissected red ape on a slab.
Yeah. It was when we looked at a flashback in that, and it was one of the last times that Dream had met Destruction,
mm-hmm.
and they were in a scientist's lab, and there was an orangutan on the slab there, and the Corinthian ate its eyes.
Of course.
Because the scientist came back and was like, where did its eyes go?
Gross.
Eyes? I see no eyes. And the Corinthian mentions optography, which is, he doesn't call it that, but that's the term for it, which is a belief that the eye recorded the last image seen before death. It was widespread in the late 19th and early 20th centuries and was a frequent plot device in the fiction of the time, to the extent that police photographed the victim's eyes in several real-life murder investigations in case the theory was true.
You may remember it from the movie remake Wild Wild West.
Oh, God, no.
Where they
try to forget most of that movie.
The movie begins, like, at one point, or it's partway through, there's the main character, there's this character at the beginning who gets killed by that flying disc that cuts your head off if you're wearing the thing around your neck. It's like a magnetic disc.
Right.
And so then at one point, Kevin Kline has this body, and when he does the autopsy, he hollows out the back of the guy's head fully and then puts a projector screen behind his head
right.
To like push light through the eye so that then it projects onto the wall or whatever. Ugh. Real gross and not a thing. Thanks, a Kevin thing. Kline.
I want the realistic version of that where somebody does it and then tries to project it and it doesn't do anything. And they're like, well,
that was gross.
It was worth a try.
Yeah. I mean, the implication is then that you're constantly burning images into your retinas and then healing them.
Yeah, it's not how eyes work.
It's nonsensical. Yeah. Anyway, so the Corinthian eats her eyes, and then he sees Loki looking real sinister.
Yeah.
The other thing I really liked, though, is when he's talking about his past memories, experiencing old memories, he says, "It is strange not being the first of your kind." And then Matthew says, "Yeah, you can say that again."
Yeah.
Because they're both not the first, right. Really.
Yeah, which makes them like the good buddy cops. Like they both have that together, even though they're very different people.
Yeah.
But also they both eat carrion.
Mm-hmm.
Like
both nasty boys.
Yeah, yeah. In addition to seeing her die, the Corinthian also sees a hotel room burning, which was probably Ruby's death in Brief Lives, and the other one being the destruction of Not a City.
Mm. And
he thinks they're echoes or ripples. So I don't think those are things that she saw, right?
No.
There's no way Carla could have seen it, but somehow the magic of what he does lets him see other things too, which really ties into what he says before he does this, which is, "I am a visionary."
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's not just a psycho killer guy. He actually does have kind of interesting like powers, but they're super gross. And then back in the dreaming, Morpheus notes a bunch of ravens showed up, just hanging out, cawing and talking, hiding, waiting.
And these are the ravens that left the Tower of London and elsewhere.
Yeah.
On Earth.
So a whole bunch of ravens took flight, and now they're showing up in the dreaming.
Mm.
And then on Satyr Day, the castle received a visitor.
This is like a real Game of Thrones moment here.
It really is.
As in like, oh, you thought this was sacred?
Yeah.
Boom. So what I love is we never see this person.
Mm-hmm. Just their shadow.
We see the shadow, and the shadow is of three figures,
mm-hmm.
but they are often referred to by the other characters as a single woman.
Yeah.
Like the other characters keep referring to them as a single person, and then it refers to themselves in the plural.
Mm-hmm. And the griffin threatens.
And run away, lady, run very fast.
And it's the youngest of the kindly ones who reminds the griffin how old they are.
"Griffin, you are old. Your flesh is meat, and the meat is decaying. Your bones are dry and brittle. Within you now, lion and eagle abandon their battle for dominance and surrender to time and to the grave."
"Lord, I cannot feel you, Lord."
Dragon is pissed.
Oh, yeah. I
love the snarky bit, too.
Mm-hmm.
So basically Dream says, like, let them in, because they say that they will not actually harm him directly at this time.
And that apparently is an oath that they have to obey.
And so the dragon says, "I am honor bound to warn you to stay on the path through the castle. Straying from the path could mean your destruction. You killed my friend, woman. Stray from the path." I love it.
Yeah. They don't, of course. They make their way through the castle of the dreaming, past a couple of cats playing cards and a few nightmares on the stairs, and to the room where Dream is, where Dream says, "Come in, Leta Hall."
"We are not Leta Hall."
"No.
We are far more than Leta Hall. We are the kindly ones, Morpheus. We are the Erinnies. We are vengeance and hatred unending. We are your doom."
"You hurt my gatekeeper."
"We destroyed your gatekeeper."
"In a manner of speaking, perhaps, I can create another who would not even know that it had ever died. Why are you here?"
"For now, simply to offer some advice."
What we're seeing in the shadow behind them really looks like Hecate. She was shown in statues as a trio of women, one holding a whip, one holding a sword, and the center one holding a torch.
Mm.
And Hecate was very much tied together with the kindly ones.
Mm-hmm. Basically, she's going to come and destroy the dream world. They'll destroy everything you've ever loved, anything you have ever cared for, and then they'll destroy you. And then when he asks why, Leta kind of says on her own, "You killed my son, you pasty-faced bastard." And then together, they say, "You've spilled the blood of your family, Morpheus."
Mm-hmm. Because they have different reasons for doing this.
Mm-hmm.
She wants vengeance for Daniel's death. They want just to get him because he killed his own family, spilled his own family's blood. This is my world, ladies. I control it. I am responsible for it. You will neither destroy it, nor will you destroy me.
No. How fares the griffin on your gate, Dream King? He looks so small.
Right? The pullback, his hand being there. He has no response to that.
Mm-hmm.
And as they, that's also them leaving, right? They were up close and it pulls back. So they leave and he immediately pulls out his giant glowing cell phone to call Matthew.
1-800-ORB.
And he's like, hey, yo, it's been 5 days. What the hell's going on? Why aren't you in the waking world? And they're like, oh, he's not in the waking world anymore. We'll find him. We'll be there soon. And then I have a certain amount of faith and confidence in both of you. It would disappoint me exceedingly to find that it had been misplaced.
Love it. It's like, yo, trying not to panic here.
Yeah.
But...
Matthew says, I just hope you know what you're doing, Corinthian. And Corinthian says, yeah, that should be it, just up ahead. Matthew says, yonder lies the palace of my father. Eh? Let's hope we're not expected. This is a reference to what's actually a false claim about Tony Curtis, the actor.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Curtis grew up in the Bronx, has a very working class Bronx accent himself. He worked very hard to get rid of it. But people kind of slagged him and made a joke that that's what he would say in one of the movies that he did that was a very period piece.
Mm-hmm.
He never did say that line. They actually said it was in the movie The Black Shield of Falworth that he said that.
Mm-hmm.
That line's not in there at all. Does say a similar line in the movie The Son of Ali Baba, mm-hmm. which, by the way, really does not hold up these days.
I can
with
just
a whole
assume
bunch of white guys.
Tony Curtis, son of Ali Baba. Yeah. I believe you.
Anyway.
I would be shocked if it held up.
Right. The line he says is, this is my father's palace and yonder lies the valley of the sun. But that one also, no Bronx accent in it at all. I've actually found the entire movie on YouTube and here's the scene is at 29 minutes, 40 seconds in. And here he is saying the line.
This is my father's palace, and yonder lies the Valley of the Sun.
I never dreamed anything could be so beautiful.
There is an apartment.
It's fine. It's
He's
fine.
He's doing a good transatlantic accent.
Yeah. It's good. And he was very sensitive about it, because Hugh Hefner brought it up one time, and he like very seriously said, I never said that. And he was like, don't ever tell anybody that, because it's a great story.
Yeah.
But he didn't like that at all. Because he worked so hard, right? Getting rid of his accent. That's a thing that many actors are very proud of, is losing the accent that they've got so that they can play whatever part they need to.
Yeah.
Yeah, not at all true, but totally in the popular culture. A lot of people thought it was true. The Sandman Annotations actually thought that this was true as well, but I double-checked and found out, nope, wasn't.
Ooh.
Yep.
Fulgham, the new Sandman Annotations.
Joe Fulgham knows how to Google things. Be shocked how many people don't.
I mean, Google didn't exist when those annotations were made.
Oh, I'm not slight. Oh, it is astounding the information that is in the Sandman annotations for its time. Because, yeah, it was pre-Google, pre-Wikipedia. I think I find a lot of stuff that's on Wikipedia that probably came from people getting it out of the Sandman annotations and then finding their original source and putting it onto it. Like, it's that close to what they talk about. So, no, I'm not at all slight. I'm talking about modern day. We have Google now, and there's so many people who don't. When you can just very easily... I hate it when people argue stuff. Like, I'll stand with people and they'll be arguing back and forth and I'm like, why don't you just look up what the truth is rather than this yes it is, no it isn't stuff?
Google it.
I got my phone in my pocket, so do you. Oh,
the
wait,
sum total of human knowledge.
Right?
Anyway. Right here.
Okay, rant over.
And then a wolf attack.
Yep, random wolf attack.
Just random wolf attack. Why?
I don't know.
Where are they? Where are they? The wolves are attacking.
Well, who are they tracking down?
I see a castle in the distance.
Who are they tracking down?
I guess that they're tracking down Loki.
Right.
And then he's got wolves.
Yeah, so I think a wolf wouldn't be out of the ordinary as a defender for Loki.
Okay.
I mean, he had one wolf that was his son. Fenris. That's not Fenris, though. Fenris wouldn't die to a nightmare that easily.
Yeah.
But maybe one of Fenris's pops.
Hmm.
Don't worry, it's an evil wolf. Look at those green eyes. That's evil. Also, so is Corinthian. He's kind of evil, too. He's just loyal and evil.
Do you think it was a real wolf? Do you think we were expected?
We're a long way from the real world now, Matthew. I think we can assume that we are expected. But real or not, That was still my first kill of this life, Matthew. And the eyes are mine.
Yuck!
He's so creepy gross. I love it.
Yuck!
I love it.
Meanwhile,
we catch up with a few other people.
Yeah, so Lucifer is playing show tunes at his club. He's getting mm-hmm. tired of them, though. He's also playing show tunes that are particularly Cole Porter songs that are risque, mm-hmm. including ones that were never recorded, that he only ever played just like at intimate parties with his right. friends.
It mentions a song called She Never Went Down on the Titanic. Mm. I tried to find out if that actually was a song that he would play. And I did find one person making a comment on some article somewhere saying that, yes, he would play private songs at these parties, including She Never Went Down on the Titanic. But it had happened so late after this issue came out that it could totally be just somebody taking Neil making this up.
Yeah.
And then that becoming part of, again, like Yonder Lies the Palace of My Fada, right? Yeah. So I can't confirm that Cole Porter would do this kind of stuff. Those first three songs, though, are Cole Porter songs. Pets, yes. My Most Intimate Friend, and After All, I'm Only a Schoolgirl. I found some YouTube links to somebody performing them. Mm. I have no idea how good they are. I'm not a Cole Porter person, but I'll put them up in the show notes as well. There's going to be a lot of videos, that I think, in the show notes for this, which, again, you can find at thedreaming.motivedust.com. Mm. And then we see Thessaly, or Larissa, enjoying lamb stew.
Yes. She's pissed. She had to buy a new cot because Lita's still on her bed.
Yep.
I find that funny. She could have maybe moved Lita to the cot. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
But she put the circle, a special circle around the bed. So
oh, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So she's chilling on a cot. She's upset because she's basically burned through all of her money.
Yep. So she's got to eat lamb. Which she just happened to have lying around. She's reading a book about John Bauer, who is probably the artist from around the turn of the century, known for illustrating Swedish fairy tales such as In the Troll Wood. I've got a pretty cool little image again from that I'll put up at the show notes. It's very nice art. I really like the style. It's cool. Mm-hmm. You should check it out.
And Nuala, mm-hmm. she's back at the fairy place.
Tir na n'og.
Yeah, the fairy place, Tir na n'og.
Tir na n'og is one of the names for the Celtic otherworld, the realm of the deities, or perhaps just a part of it. It's often depicted as a paradise and supernatural realm of everlasting youth, beauty, health, abundance, and joy. They enjoy a life of eating, dancing, and loving, and they never have to deal with death or dying.
Yay!
Yeah.
So in Tir na n'og, she's basically sitting there being like, God, what did I used to do all day before I had to clean a house all the time? And, you know, she did some cool stuff, but apparently none of that seems very fun or interesting to her right now.
Mm-hmm.
So she's fingering the stone on her neck, unconsciously.
Mm-hmm. Thinking about dream.
Yeah, because that's the boon he gave her, right?
I guess you could say she's daydreaming. You're welcome.
I quit. That was it. That was no. 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 That was bad.
Rose is reading her old journal entries.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them says, it's not that I'm heartless. Yeah, actually you are. You gave your heart away to your grandmother, remember?
Mm-hmm.
We've had that problem with her a little bit.
Mm-hmm. She decides to call Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a kind of weird one-sided conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's revealed that he can't talk because he's with someone right now that he probably should have told Rose about.
I wonder where he had to go at 5:30 in the morning.
As in, like, he's married?
Probably.
Right.
Fuck. I love the triple shot there for just lying there, arms folded.
Yeah, now I wonder if she's still unfeeling as she was back then.
I think heartless means the positive emotions, but you can still be super annoyed that the thing you wanted isn't there. Like,
well, it's not just the positive. Why doesn't it hurt me more when it ends? Why don't I feel it? As in, like, yeah, like people fall in love with her and she has these relationships,
mm-hmm.
but then she's kind of like, whatever. Like when it ends, it doesn't bother her.
She was also told that if she came back here, she would get her heart back.
Ah.
So maybe this is part of it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And on Sunday, they held the first funeral.
Very sad.
Yeah.
We've got Cain and Abel there, and Merv Pumpkinhead, and Lucien.
And a big bunny.
And the two other gatekeepers. And a big empty hole to put Griffin's remains in.
Who's the bunny?
Ruthven. We've seen the bunny before.
Okay.
I think he even had a line. I can't remember exactly when it was. He had a big, one of those neck ruffs. He was wearing fancy clothes.
Mm. And of course, if you look, the ravens are looking down
yep.
and watching.
Oh yeah, they're paying attention. They're like, hey, I know it's mostly bones, but are you going to eat that?
Also, it's three ravens.
Mm-hmm.
The three ravens that showed up just before are the kindly ones.
Yep.
And now three ravens are watching the funeral.
Yeah. So there we go, part eight. Stuff's happening. The griffin has died.
Mm.
The kindly ones have breached the dreaming.
And killed one of the most powerful creatures in it.
Right? Totally.
Yeah. Like, if she could just show up and, like, crush a nightmare, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, but one of the three guardians of the castle.
Of Dream's Castle Gate. Yeah. Yeah.
And just like that. Just instant.
Oh, you're old. Ah! Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is very bad news. And I think the ravens all know that. They're showing up.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of bodies. Well, how about we look at your predictions from last time?
They were wrong.
Mostly. So your predictions were, you went a little over all over the place, but basically Leta will wake up, which is not true. She'll be empowered by the Furies. Totally, that happened.
Totally true.
Yeah. Uh-huh. The Furies won't directly come after the dream. The Ravens will, which is it's not really true. They did come after Dream. They just said, we're not going to do it now.
Yeah.
But we're going to F you up, man. You're going down. And the Ravens seem to just be watching so far. And then you've also got Dream or whoever confronts Loki, who admits how/why he's doing what he's doing.
Well, I do think, so my prediction is that in the next issue, Matthew and the Corinthian will have their conversation with Loki.
I think that's fair because they're right outside the castle.
I think Loki will trick them.
Okay.
Loki gonna Loki, he gonna trick him.
Okay, so Loki tricks Corinthian and Matthew.
But I do think they'll also find the baby.
Okay.
Because I think that's gonna be, how many more issues do we have in this book?
13 total.
This is 8. Okay. So it won't be for a while. But I do kind of have an end game prediction, which is, and I don't think it'll happen in the next issue, but I do think overall that Daniel will be recovered in some way and that Dream will give Leta Daniel back. And by returning Daniel to her, she will kind of sever her connection to the Furies and she won't want to kill Dream anymore. And that will like prevent Dream from dying. That's my end game thought. That's not really for the next issue, though. That's just me kind of planning out the end of the series a little bit, if that makes sense.
Okay.
But yeah, directly in the next issue, I do believe that Loki will trick Matthew and the Corinthian when they meet him.
Well, then I guess we're going to have to find out what happens next episode.
Dun, dun, dun.
You've been dreaming of The Sandman, issue 64, The Kindly Ones, part 8. For show notes, visit thedreaming.motivedust.com. Support future episodes at patreon.com/thedreaming, and we'd sure appreciate it if you'd tell your friends about us. Our theme music is Oneri by Kai Engel. Hear more at kaiengel.bandcamp.com. The Dreaming was recorded in Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada, on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Kikate, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. I'm Joe Fulgham. Thanks for listening. Time to wake up.